unidentified male voice said.
Unidentified, yet definitely familiar. Shada searched her memory.
Which I haven't broken,
Calrissian said, his voice sounding a little defensive.
Really?
The other voice asked coldly.
You've as good as told them there's a secret here. Do you think either of them needs more than that to gather their little shovels together and start digging? And then, abruptly, the memory clicked. It was the smuggler chief, Talon Card.
Frankly, Card, I think they've both got more important things to worry about right now,
Calrissian said tartly.
And to be honest, I never understood why you were so obsessed about secrecy on this thing in the first place. So George Cardass was once a competitor of yours.
Keep your voice down, Card growled. I don't want the others hearing that name. And Cardass wasn't a competitor. He was something else entirely.
Fine, Calrissian said. Whatever. The point is that we can't afford the luxury of silly games anymore. Not with...
Silly games?
Card cut him off.
Calrissian, you have no idea what you're talking about.
I know exactly what I'm talking about, Calrissian retorted. I'm talking about the genius who came this close to taking down the whole New Republic 10 years ago. Whatever Thrawn's got planned, he has to be counting on the Kaer Mas issue to keep us divided.
Shada felt her breath catch in her throat. Whatever Thrawn had planned? But Thrawn was dead, wasn't he?
Thank you for the historical review, Card said. I was there, if you'll remember. Let's not act like the whole New Republic's on the edge of desperation and collapse, though, all right?
Are you sure we're not?
Calrissian countered.
After all this time, do you really think Thrawn would have shown himself if he wasn't ready to pounce?
If he intends to pounce, Card argued. There are many other things he could be planning besides an overt attack.
Oh, that's comforting, Calrissian growled. And all the more reason to get the Kaer Mas issue resolved as quickly as possible. If there's even half a chance Cardass can help, someone has to go see him.
And you're suggesting I should be that someone.
You're the one who knew him?
Calrissian pointed out.
That may not be an asset, Card said. In fact, it could be quite the opposite.
There was the soft sound of a slightly exasperated sigh.
Look, Card, I don't know what went on between you and Cardass. What I do know is that we're facing Grand Admiral Thrawn here. And not just us, you're facing him too. Don't forget, he specifically said he'd be coming after you.
Scare words, Card murmured.
I don't remember Thrawn ever relying on scare words the last time, Calrissian said. Everything he said was backed up with action. But since you've brought up the subject of scare words, what are you so afraid of, anyway?
There was the sound of footsteps moving toward the window.
You never met Cardass, Landor,
Card said quietly.
If you had, you'd understand. In his own way, he was more ruthless even than Jabba the Hutt.
Yet you asked Mara and me to go hunt him down.
I didn't ask you to do anything at all, Card said. If you recall, I tried to get you to sell me that beck and call outright.
You also tried to tell me it was just some useless curiosity from pre-Clone Wars days,
Calrissian reminded him dryly.
You knew perfectly well I wouldn't fall for a story like that. Anyway, that's beside the point. We tracked him down and made it back just fine.
You only tracked him as far as a likely system, Card said. You're asking me to walk into whatever fortress he's set up there and go face to face with him.
If Thrawn isn't stopped, he'll be the one who eventually comes knocking at Cardass's retirement home, Calrissian said. If Cardass has any brains, he'll thank you for the warning.
Cardass never thanked anyone for anything in his life,
Card said bluntly.
And he most certainly hasn't retired either. He'll be scheming or plotting something. That's the nature of the man. And he will not want to be found, particularly not by me.
Calrissian hissed between his teeth.
Fine, he bit out. You want to go bury yourself in a hole and wait for Thrawn to come dig you out? You go right ahead. Give me a copy of Mara's route to the Exocron system, and I'll go find him myself.
Don't be absurd, Card said. You and the Lady Luck wouldn't last 2 days alone in the Cathal Outback.
Who says I'll be going alone? Calrissian countered. I thought I'd ask General Bel Iblis and the Peregrine along.
That would be the absolute worst thing you could do, Card said, an edge of exasperation starting to color his tone. You bring a capital warship into the Exocron system, and Cardass will either go completely underground or blow it out of the sky. You don't know him the way I do.
No, Calrissian agreed quietly. I don't. There was a long silence. A long waiting silence.
You should never have given up on your con man origins, Calrissian, Card said at last. You're far too good at it. All right, I'll go.
Thanks, Calrissian said. You won't regret this.
Don't make promises you can't keep, Card warned, his usual easy humor back in his voice. I suppose we should go break the news to the others.
The door whispered open, and the glow panel shut off. And as the room went dark again, Shada heaved herself up out of her hiding place. Rolling back across the bed and onto her feet, she crossed the room and slipped out just before the door closed again. The two men, Calrissian in the lead, were heading down the hallway toward the edge of what looked like an Alderaanian-style conversation circle, both of them completely oblivious to her presence behind them. Moving up, she fell into silent step behind Card.
Okay, I give up,
Han said, a puzzled look on his face.
What was that all about?
Leia shook her head.
I don't know,
she admitted, replaying the last exchange between Lando and Card in her mind as she gazed at the hallway where the two of them had disappeared toward the boys' bedroom.
Some kind of secret they don't want us to know about.
Yeah, I figured that much,
Han said.
What I meant was, what's the secret?
Leia threw him one of her vast repertoire of patient looks, an inventory created by a lifetime of diplomatic service and honed to a fine art by 10 years of dealing with 3 boisterous children.
You know I can't just go in and dig things out of their minds, she reminded him. It's not even ethical with enemies, let alone friends.
You Jedi are no fun sometimes,
Han said. His tone was bantering, but she could tell from his eyes and mood that he was still uneasy about the situation.
We're not in the business to have fun, she pointed out.
You couldn't just sort of, stretch out and get a feel for what they're talking about in there?
Leia smiled wryly.
I wish you wouldn't do that,
she admonished him. He pulled out one of his own repertoire of innocent looks.
Do what?
Suggest that I do something unethical right when I'm trying to persuade myself that it wouldn't hurt anyone, she told him. That's very disconcerting.
Especially coming from a guy who isn't supposed to have near as good a conscience as you do,
he suggested blandly. Leia rolled her eyes.
I swear, Han, I think you can read my mind better without Jedi senses than I can read yours with them.
He waved a hand.
Professional secret. One of the things you learn is a scoundrel.
Of course,
Leia said, looking in the direction of the hallway again.
I wonder how unethical it would be to send 3PO in to take notes for them.
Lady Vader,
a gravelly voice cut in. Leia jumped. As usual, she hadn't heard or sensed the Nogri's approach.
Oh, what is it, Garak?
Perhaps trouble,
Garak growled.
The sentry on the rooftop is not responding to his comlink.
Out of the corner of her eye, Leia saw Han roll slightly in his chair to loosen his blaster in its holster.
You've sent a team to check on him?
They are on the way,
the Nogri said,
But until we know otherwise, we must assume an intruder is attempting to break in. Where are the others?
Down the hall, Leia said. Even as she pointed, she felt the subtle change in air pressure as the distant bedroom door slid open. That should be them now, she added, as the sound of approaching footsteps confirmed it.
I would ask that you stay in this room for the present,
Garak said. As he spoke, Lando appeared around the corner, followed by Card.
If there is an intruder, we will need to seek him out.
Followed by a tall, slender woman, dressed in a dark gray combat jumpsuit.
Don't bother, the woman said quietly. I'm here.
Chapter 22.
Their reactions, as reactions went, were quick and efficient. At the same time, Shada had to admit, they were oddly comic to watch. The shock of the unexpected voice behind him sent Calrissian jumping half a meter into the air, his gun hand getting momentarily tangled in his cloak before he could haul his blaster free. The Nogri's blaster, unsurprisingly, was already out and trained on her, with Solo's not very far behind. Card didn't jump nearly as far as Calrissian had, but instead of going for a weapon himself, he merely took a long step to the side to give Solo and the Nogri a clear field of fire. A smart move, but no more than Shada would have expected from someone of his reputation. Counselor Organa Solo, in contrast to the others, didn't move at all. Shada didn't move either. She stood where she was, hands hanging empty at her sides, wondering distantly if the vaunted and probably overrated Nogri combat reflexes would make it more or less likely the guard would overreact to her unexpected appearance by gunning her down. She almost hoped he would. In many ways, it would be the simplest way to end things. But the Nogri didn't fire. Neither did Solo nor Calrissian. And with a vague sort of half-regret, Shada knew she wasn't going to get to go out the easy way. It was Organa Solo who broke the brittle silence.
Who are you?
She asked, her voice as serene as her face.
My name is Shada Dukal, Shada said. I'm not here to hurt any of you.
Organa Solo nodded.
I know.
Solo threw her a quick sideways glance.
You do?
My danger sense would have reacted otherwise,
Organa Solo told him.
Long before she arrived in this room.
What did you do to the guard on the roof?
The Nogri snarled.
I taught him not to be carelessly compassionate, Shada said. He's not hurt, except possibly his pride.
There was a quiet mewing of alien language from a comlink attached to the Nogri's collar.
Garak?
Organa Solo murmured.
He is unhurt,
the Nogri said. His blaster was still aimed at Shada, but his eyes seemed fractionally less baleful.
They are freeing him from his restraints.
There was a whisper of movement from the corridor behind Shada. She started to turn her head.
Stand where you are,
a Nogri voice ordered from behind her.
Lift your arms.
Shada did as instructed, holding her arms out to the sides as alien hands flitted across her body, wondering where this other group had been hiding. To have sneaked up behind her in what had seemed to be a dead-end corridor. She smiled to herself. Of course. They'd come from the roof, following her route down the safety line and in through the bedroom window. And they'd done so with a speed and efficiency that rivaled the best the Mistral could have offered. Perhaps the Nogri weren't as overrated as she'd thought. A minute later, the probing hands were gone, taking her hip pack and climbing harness with them.
Sit down,
the Nogri standing next to Organa Solo ordered, gesturing toward one of the chairs in the conversation circle.
Keep your hands where they can be seen.
Don't you trust your searchers?
Shada asked, sitting down in the indicated chair.
Or your mistress, for that matter? Counselor Organa Solo already told you I wasn't here to hurt anyone.
The Nogri's eyes seemed to blaze.
Why are you here?
Organa Sullo asked calmly, before the alien could speak.
I wanted to talk to you, Shada told her, settling her forearms along the chair's armrests. This was the only way I could do it.
She'd expected an outraged denial, or at the very least a snort of derision, but the other woman merely lifted her eyebrows slightly. Sullo was less of a disappointment.
What's that supposed to mean?
He demanded. His blaster, Shada noted, was in his lap, no longer pointed directly at her, but he still had a grip on it.
It means that unless you're someone with power or money, the corridors of the high and mighty are closed to you, Shada told him,
not particularly caring whether she sounded bitter or not.
I've been trying to call for the past 3 days, and no one would put me through. So much for the great and wonderful New Republic, friend of all the common people.
So what, you never heard of leaving a message?
Sullo growled.
A message that said what? Shada countered. Then a nobody with no credentials or status wanted to talk to a great and glorious High Counselor? It would have been tossed out with the next clearing wipe.
You're talking with me now,
Organa Sullo said mildly.
What is it you want to say?
Shada focused on her, the carefully rehearsed words seeming to stick in her throat. Words that would slice through her last ties to the Mistral, and her people, and her life.
I want to join you, she said,
her voice sounding hollow and distant in her ears.
I want to join the New Republic.
For a painfully long moment, the only sound in the room was the thudding of her own heart in her throat. It was, predictably, Sullo who broke the silence.
You what?
He asked.
I want to join the New Republic, Shada repeated.
The second time wasn't any easier than the first.
I have a number of abilities you'll find useful. Combat and surveillance, escort and security.
Why are you asking us about this?
Sullo interrupted, sounding bewildered.
The New Republic has recruitment centers all over Coruscant.
I don't think you fully appreciate the situation here, Sullo.
Card spoke up before Shada could reply.
Shada hasn't just walked in off the street, or rather dangled in off the roof. She's chief bodyguard for our smuggler friend, Masik.
A ripple of surprise ran across the others' faces.
Former bodyguard, Shada corrected. I resigned 3 weeks ago.
Card cocked an eyebrow.
Your idea?
Shada felt her throat tighten.
Not entirely.
I don't see what difference it makes where she came from,
Sullo persisted.
We're still none of us in the business of hiring.
Han's right, Shada,
Organa Sullo said, her eyes studying Shada's face with an uncomfortable intensity. Had those Jedi techniques pulled the secret Mistral connection from her mind?
There's really nothing we can do for you.
I'm not asking for charity, Shada bit out.
Frankly, you need me more than I need you. Especially with Thrawn on the loose again.
What do you know about Thrawn?
Sullo asked sharply.
I was in the back room just now,
Shada said. She glanced over at Card, caught the sudden tightening of his expression.
Calrissian implied he was back.
She looked back at Organa Sullo.
I also know about the Kaamas document,
she told the other woman.
And I know that the only way you're going to get out of the mess you're in is to get hold of an intact copy of it.
Out of the corner of her eye, she saw Calrissian throw a significant look at Card, a look the smuggler chief carefully ignored.
It would certainly help,
Organa Sullo acknowledged.
What does this have to do with you?
You're going to need help, Shada told her. I can supply it.
All by yourself?
Card murmured.
Yes, all by myself, Shada bit out. You've seen me in action. You know what I can do.
She looked back at Sullo.
So do your people, though you might not know it, she said. 19 years ago on Tatooine, I helped get you the technical readout for a prototype component of the second Death Star's super laser.
Another ripple of surprise ran through the room. a ripple that, to Shada's own mild surprise, didn't seem to touch Solo himself.
Really?
He said.
Tell us how.
A friend and I stole the component from an Imperial research base, she said, trying to read his face.
Suddenly, the one who'd been pushing her the most seemed almost to be on her side.
It was codenamed the Hammer Tong. We flew the ship it was mounted aboard to Tatooine and—
What kind of ship?
Solo interrupted.
Lorinar strike cruiser, Shada said. Heavily modified. The interior had been gutted so the thing would fit inside. We half buried the ship in a dune and went to the Mos Eisley Cantina to find a freighter pilot with a ship who could transport a segment of it for us.
She gestured to Solo.
My partner and I saw you gun down Greedo in there, she said. We were going to try to hire you, but were picked up by the Imperials before we could get over to you.
Why?
Solo asked.
I mean, why did they grab you?
Karoli and I had disguised ourselves as Bria and Seni Tanaka. Our camp... We heard we looked a lot like them.
She corrected as smoothly as she could. Now was not the time to mention the Mistral camouflage pre-match files.
We didn't know some moth had put a detain order on them. Anyway, a rebel sympathizer sprung us from our police cell and got us a freighter. We flew out a segment of the superlaser component and gave him a droid with the technical readout loaded in.
What was this sympathizer's name?
Solo asked. Shada had to search her memory.
Windward, she said. Reege Windward.
Solo nodded slowly.
So that was you, huh?
Organa Solo blinked at him.
You knew about this?
I read Windward's report,
Solo told her.
It was in the briefing text Doc Madian gave us before we headed out for Endor.
His wife shook her head.
I must have missed it.
Well, there were a couple of small differences, Solo said dryly. According to Windward, they'd promised him his own segment of the superlaser in return for springing them.
There was a sandstorm coming, Shada protested. There was no time to cut another segment and get it loaded.
And they didn't exactly give him the technical readout, Solo added. He had to sort of borrow their droid to get it.
Shada felt her face warm.
Yes, you're right,
she admitted.
I'd forgotten that.
Charming,
Calrissian murmured under his breath. Shada threw him a glare.
For whatever it's worth, my partners thought we should have killed him rather than let anyone know what we'd done,
she bit out.
I stopped them from doing that.
There was another silence. A hard, tense, discomforting silence. Shada kept her eyes on Organa Solo, trying to read her face. As the ranking political power of the group, it would be up to her to make the final decision.
I've got an idea, Calrissian spoke up. She said Cod knows what she can do. So why don't we send her with him?
Shada looked at Card, her impulsive refusal freezing in her throat. She'd just wasted 12 years with one smuggling group, and she hadn't come to Coruscant just to hook up with another one. But there was something in Card's expression.
And just where is it Card's going?
Solo asked, cocking his head toward the smuggler chief.
A special mission, Card said.
His eyes were still on Shada, that expression still on his face.
Something Calrissian asked me to do.
Do we get a hint?
Organa Solo asked, a small smile playing around her lips. Card didn't smile back.
It's possible there's a copy of the complete Ka'amas document out there that's not in Imperial hands, he told her. I'm going to see if I can get hold of it.
Solo and Organa Solo exchanged startled glances.
Why didn't you tell us this before?
Organa Solo demanded, the patient amusement gone from her face.
Because up till now, none of this had been any of my business,
Card said coolly.
Political arguments have nothing to do with me,
except insofar as planetary snits and sulkings tend to benefit information dealers. He looked at Calrissian.
But now a new factor has been stirred into the mix. One which I have been persuaded can no longer be ignored.
Organa Solo hunched her shoulders, as if a sudden cold draft had blown across her back.
Thrawn.
Card nodded soberly. Thrawn. He looked at Shaeda. And yes, I would be greatly pleased to have Shaeda's assistance. If she's willing, of course.
Shaeda grimaced. The irony a bitter taste in her mouth. 19 years late, she'd finally made the wrenching decision to shift her allegiance from her own people to the New Republic. Only to find that the New Republic didn't want her. And the only one who did was as much an outcast from their great and wonderful new society as she was.
Sure, she told Card. Why not?
Trust me, Shaeda. Card gets all his best people this way, Calrissian said dryly. When you get aboard the Wild Card, ask Mara Jade how she got hired.
Something flickered across Card's face.
Mara won't be with us, he said. That's one of the reasons I wanted to talk to you tonight, Leia. Mara's come to some kind of accident.
Calrissian's sly smile vanished, and the others sat up straighter.
What kind of accident?
Organa Solo asked.
A confusing one, Card said with a grimace. She and the Starry Ice tracked one of the unidentified ships your brother saw in the Cowron system.
Wait a minute, Solo interrupted. What's this about unidentified ships?
He and Mara saw it skulking around the Kavarlu pirate space, Card said. Didn't he send you a report?
Yes, but only a very sketchy one,
Organa Solo said.
He just said he hadn't learned anything from the pirates and that he would give us all the details when he got back to Coruscant. There was nothing about any unidentified ship.
He must not have wanted to say anything on an open channel, Card said. I've got a copy of his and Mara's records of that sighting, plus the data we took when another of the ships buzzed the errant venturer. I'll get copies to you before I leave.
Forget the ships a minute, Calrissian put in impatiently. What happened to Mara?
The Starry Ice tracked it to a small world in Gradilis sector, Card said. Mara went in for a closer look and spotted a fortress, entered a cave for a one-sided conversation with unknown beings, mentioned Skywalker's name in response to something they said or did, and then abruptly went silent. Calrissian's face had gone rigid.
You mean she was...
No, she wasn't killed, Card hastened to assure him. At least, not then. You can hear her breathing on the recording that was pulse-transmitted back to the Starry Ice.
And these beings knew Luke?
Organa Solo asked, her forehead furrowed. With thought or dread, Shaeda couldn't tell which.
Knew him or knew of him, Card told her. There wasn't enough context for us to tell which.
We need to get hold of him right away, Solo said to his wife. See if he can tell us anything.
Card cleared his throat self-consciously.
Actually, I've already spoken to him. He couldn't shed any light on it either.
Organa Solo regarded him suspiciously.
And?
She prompted.
That was the other thing I wanted to tell you, Card said, his urbane air cracking just a bit. He's gone off to find her.
Organa Solo's expression didn't change, but suddenly the temperature in that part of the room seemed to drop a few degrees.
He's what?
She asked, her tone ominous.
She's in danger, Leia, Card said. Luke was the only one who could get there fast enough to make a difference. The only one who had a reasonable chance of dealing with whatever the creatures were Mara ran into. And whoever or whatever is up in that fortress. This doesn't just concern Mara. It concerns the entire New Republic.
And what? You think this Bothan mess doesn't?
Solo growled. He was on his feet now, glaring across the conversation circle at Card.
We've got 100 little wars simmering out there. Half of them using Ka-Moss as an excuse to go in and settle old grudges. We've already emptied the New Republic Diplomatic Corps and Jedi Academy trying to find enough mediators to go around. And we still don't have enough. We need Luke here.
I didn't force him to go after her, Card countered, not quite glaring back. He weighed all the factors and made his own decision.
Except that he didn't know Thrawn was back,
Solo countered.
Did he?
Let it go, Han,
Organa Solo said quietly, reaching up to touch her husband's arm.
What's done is done. Card's right. It was Luke's decision to make. He's made it, and we'll just have to manage without him until he returns.
If it helps, you can consider my service to be in exchange for his, Card said, his mouth still tight. I'm sorry to have brought such bad news. I really thought you'd be more understanding. Solo took a deep breath, exhaled it raggedly.
Yeah, he said. Well, when are you heading out?
Immediately, Card said, crossing to Shada and offering her a hand. Assuming my new assistant has no errands she has to attend to first.
I'm ready whenever you are,
Shada told him, ignoring the proffered hand and getting to her feet without assistance.
Assuming Counselor Organa Solo's bodyguards are finished sifting through my pack and climbing gear.
They are waiting for you by the door,
the Nogri beside Organa Solo said gravely. Fine, Card said, nodding to Organa Solo as he moved toward the entrance. Thank you for your hospitality, Leia. I'll contact you if and when I find anything.
Two other things, Card, before you go, Organa Solo said. Three, actually. First, will you need a translator droid for your trip?
That's a good point, Card conceded. The organization has several, of course, but none are aboard the wild card at the moment. It won't be too hard to pick up one along the way, though.
That'll take extra time, Organa Solo said. If you'd prefer, we could lend you 3PO.
Solo made a noise in the back of his throat.
Over his stripped gears, of course.
That's a very generous offer. Card cocked an eyebrow. It wouldn't have anything to do with the thought that you might be able to get an unbiased report of the trip out of him when we get back, would it?
Of course not,
Organa Solo said, arching her own eyebrows slightly.
I'm hurt that you'd even suggest such a thing.
Forgive me, Card said. In that case, I accept. With thanks.
As Han suggests, we'll want a few minutes to talk with him first,
Organa Solo said.
We can bring him over to the spaceport when we pick up those spaceship records from you. Second, I wasn't able to tell you this before, but under the circumstances, it's something you may need to know. One of the other data cards that Deveronian found at Mount Tantis was labeled the Hand of Thrawn.
Card nodded. Yes, I'd heard. Organa Solo's eyebrows lifted.
How did you... Never mind. I don't want to know.
My source and I thank you for your discretion, Card said. There's something else you need to know, though. Before Mara went chasing after that unknown ship, we picked up a transmission from it, clearly directed at the errant venture. We haven't yet been able to decipher the message, but it definitely contained Thrawn's name. His full name, not just the core name Thrawn. Solo frowned.
I didn't even know he had more name.
Most people don't, Card agreed. But Mara did. So did whoever was aboard that ship.
What do you think it means?
Organa Solo asked.
I don't know,
Card said. Maybe we'll have some answers when Skywalker and Mara get back. At any rate, I'll add a copy of that recording in with the others.
You said there were three things.
Organa Solo smiled. A smile that was shaded with tension, but a smile nonetheless.
May the Force be with you,
she said quietly. Almost involuntarily, Shada thought. Card smiled back. And with you, he said.
His eyes flicked to Solo and Calrissian.
With all of you, he added.
Goodbye.
Nice speech you made back there,
Shada commented as Card lifted the airspeeder off the Orowood Tower's pad and turned its nose toward the West Champion field where the wild card was waiting.
A little over-rehearsed, maybe, but not bad for all that.
You're too kind, Card said, looking at her out of the corner of his eye. She was staring straight ahead at the nighttime Coruscant landscape, her face faintly illuminated by the glow from the instrument board. With better light, he decided, her expression would probably still have been impossible to read.
May I ask which part of the discourse sounded like a speech to you?
That bit about why it had to be Skywalker who went charging off to rescue Mara Jade, she said. You weren't really expecting them to greet that news with shouts of joy, were you?
Card shrugged.
I didn't expect them to be quite so upset about it, either, he said. Of course, to be fair, I didn't know about Thrawn until this evening.
Shada shook her head.
It's hard to believe he survived.
Agreed, Card said. On the other hand, it's equally hard to believe the Empire would pull a dangerous stunt like this purely as a bluff. Either Thrawn's really back, or somebody somewhere has a pure 23 hidden in his vest.
Shada seemed to ponder that.
Suppose this Thrawn is actually just a clone, she said. Would it be as skilled as the original?
I suppose it would depend on how much of his tactical ability was innate and how much was learned,
Card considered.
And whether or not they used a flash-teaching imprint taken from Thrawn's own mind, and how good the pattern was, I just don't know.
Because if they have one clone of Thrawn, why not 50?
Shada went on.
And if they have 50 clones of Thrawn, why not 100 clones of that crazy dark Jedi Jorua Sabaoth, too?
Card winced. That last possibility hadn't even occurred to him.
Why not indeed?
Shada didn't pick up on his rhetorical question, and a dark silence descended on the airspeeder. Card flew mechanically, not really seeing Coruscant's magnificent horizon-to-horizon lights, or rather, seeing the total destruction of those lights superimposed on his view. Thrawn had threatened such destruction the last time he attacked the planet. This time, he might actually do it. They were descending toward the reassuring bulk of the wild card when Shada spoke again.
So who's this Georges Cardass we're looking for?
With an effort, Card shook off the vision of a circle of Star Destroyers closing in on him.
He's someone who used to be in the same business I am, he told her. Probably still is, actually.
But not a competitor?
She prompted.
You were certainly paying attention in there, he complimented her. Incidentally, just out of curiosity, where in the bedroom were you hiding? I didn't notice any place where anyone bigger than a Nogri could have been tucked away.
I was on the floor between the back bed and the wall, she said. A gap like that always looks smaller than it really is. If Cardass wasn't a competitor, what was he?
Card threw her a smile.
Persistent, too. I like that in my people.
Delighted to hear it, she said. If he wasn't a competitor, what was he?
Ahead, the wild card's hangar door was sliding open to receive them.
Ask me on the way into the Exocrone system, he told her. Assuming we make it that far.
Shada snorted under her breath.
So what? You're asking me to risk my life on nothing but your word?
You don't have to come, Card said mildly. If you want to leave right now, you're free to do so.
She looked away from him.
Thanks for the permission. I'll stay.
The airspeeder settled with a muffled clunk into its slot in the wild card's hangar.
As you choose, Card said as he shut down the engines. Out of curiosity, why exactly did you leave Mazik?
She twisted her shoulders out of the restraints.
"Ask me on the way out of the Exocron system," she said sardonically. "Assuming we make it that far."
Without waiting for a response, she popped her door and dropped feet first onto the deck.
"I'm sure some of us will,"
Card murmured, watching as she threaded her way between the other vehicles toward the exit.
The only question was, which ones?
Chapter 23.
This time, the alarm didn't come in the middle of dessert. It came instead, in the middle of the night.
Wedge jerked awake, hand flailing for a cutoff switch that wasn't where it was supposed to be. His knee twitched to the side, coming up short against something solid. And as the brief stab of pain jolted him fully awake, he remembered where he was. As per orders, and one of General Bell Iblis's hunches, he and the rest of Rogue Squadron were sleeping in their X-wings. From the sound of the alarm still blaring away, the general's hunch had apparently paid off. He slapped at the alarm switch, hitting it this time, and keyed the comm. "Antilles!"
he snapped.
"Full scramble!"
Commander Paris's voice snapped back.
"We've got a panic call in from Barthoe."
"Terrific," Wedge muttered, hitting his engine pre-start. "Trust the Bothans to ruin a good night's sleep."
"Okay, Rogues, you all heard the man. Let's get him in the air."
"Acknowledge.
Acknowledge."
There was a chorus of acknowledgements, and the line of engine pre-starts began to fill their corner of the Ditani diplomatic landing circle. Someone wearing a maintenance coverall, a Trintic probably, though it was hard to tell in the dim light, was lumbering across the field toward the X-Wings, gesturing frantically at this no doubt unauthorized noise. Wedge gestured him back and keyed in his repulsor lifts.
"What is it? Another clan-building riot?"
"Get a good grip on your helmet,"
Paris said grimly.
"According to the Bothans, a Larison attack force is on the way."
Wedge blinked. "A Larison attack force?"
"That's what they say,"
the fighter coordinator confirmed.
"A full-class war fleet. And don't ask me what their problem is." "Pick one,"
Rogue 3 grumbled.
"There's so many reasons nowadays to hate the Bothans."
"Let's not sink to the lowest divisory here,"
Wedge admonished. The X-Wings were all in the air now, forming up around Wedge as they pulled for space.
"Paris, where's the general?"
"He's on his way up,"
Paris said.
"So Talmar and her A-Wings are flying escort for his shuttle, just in case. We're going to be a few minutes behind you, though, and he said for you to go on ahead."
"And do what?"
Rogue 5 asked.
"Bluff Lasari until you get there?" "Sure,"
Paris said dryly.
"Unless, of course, the dazzling Rogue Squadron reputation routs them completely." "Oh yeah, right,"
Rogue 5 came back, just as dryly.
"Isn't it lucky for the Bothans that we and our dazzling reputation just happen to be only two systems away from them?"
Wedge frowned. It was lucky, now that he thought about it. Suspiciously lucky, in fact.
"Paris, can you pull the original order that brought us here?"
"Already pulled,"
Paris said.
"According to Coruscant, the Ditani government specifically asked for General Bell Iblis to mediate this dispute with their resident non-Tani workers." "Any idea whether the Ditani government owes favors or large amounts of money to the Bothan government?"
Rogue 9 asked.
"That's a good question,"
Paris said thoughtfully.
"A very good question, in fact."
"It's my old CORSEC training,"
Rogue 9 said.
"They taught us to always follow the money."
"Well, at the moment, the money's irrelevant,"
Wedge said. They had reached the deeper darkness of space now, almost far enough to make the jump to light speed.
"We've been called in to defend a New Republic member from aggression, and that's what we're going to do."
"Good luck,"
Paris said.
"We'll be there as soon as we can."
The panel beeped. The course was set.
"Okay, Rogues," Wedge said. "Let's go."
The flight to Barthoe took a little longer than that panic call run they'd taken a week ago to bail out the Sifkris and their Palmwam plant shipment. Somehow, though, it felt a lot shorter. Wedge found his mind bouncing back and forth between questions of imminent Larison aggression and possible Bothan duplicity
general galactic tension, and what in blazes his squadron was doing in the middle of all of it. And all too soon, they were there.
"Form up!"
he ordered, as the rest of the X-Wings came out of hyperspace around him. "Pick up your long-range scanners."
"I don't think,"
Rogue Two said tightly,
"that that'll be necessary."
Wedge grimaced.
"No," he agreed. "I guess not."
It was a Larison attack force, all right. And for once, it looked as if the Bothans hadn't been exaggerating. Spread out across the sky, directly ahead of the incoming X-Wings, were six capital ships, all of alien design and manufacture, but each nearly the size of a New Republic assault frigate. Another 20 smaller ships filled the gaps between them, with at least 5 squadrons of Starfighter-class ships forming a defense perimeter around the whole group.
"Our reputation had better be really dazzling today,"
Rogue 12 muttered.
"Cut the chatter,"
Wedge told him, studying the group. They were well outside Bothawi's planetary shield, beyond the range of any ground-based weapons the defenders were likely to have. He couldn't remember whether or not the Bothans had any orbital battle platforms circling their homeworld. But if they did, none of them were on this side of the planet at the moment. Which pretty much left Rogue Squadron all by itself out here. 12 X-Wings and a reputation. He cleared his throat and keyed the comm for a broadband common frequency.
"This is General Wedge Antilles and the New Republic Unit Rogue Squadron, calling the Larison Task Force. You're encroaching without permission on Bothan space. Please state your intentions."
"This matter is none of your concern, Rogue Squadron,"
a startlingly melodious voice responded.
"It is a private dispute between the Larison and Bothan governments."
Wedge glanced at his scanners. No sign yet of Bill Iblis and the Peregrine.
"May I ask the nature of this dispute?"
"Death and resolution. The death of 2 Larissi at the hands of the Bothans, and the Bothan refusal to resolve them."
Wedge grimaced, keying to the Rogue's private frequency. Clearly there was a terminology problem here. Some Larison concept or phrase that wasn't translating properly to basic. But even so, there was something else he wasn't getting here. Any idea what he's talking about?
Hang on, I'm checking the records,"
Rogue 11 said.
"I've got a hunch. Yup, here it is. There were 2 Larissi killed in that riot at the Combined Clans building. Both shot, one of them before the mob broke into the building."
"Thanks," Wedge said, switching back. "Larison Commander, I understand your anger over your loss. What is it you want the Bothans to do in restitution?"
"Larison law is very precise. Claw for claw, horn for horn, life for life. One guilty for himself, or 10 innocent of his tribe."
A cold chill ran down Wedge's back.
"What do you mean, 10 innocent?" he asked carefully.
"The Bothans have refused to turn over to us members of the clans who killed 2 unarmed Larissi. 2 lives will thus be paid by 20.
So mathematically precise, Wedge thought. But how exactly they thought they were going to pull off such a trick with all the Bothans huddling safe behind their planetary shield?
"Uh-oh,"
Rogue 4 said quietly.
"Vector 3-6 by 4-1.
Wedge looked. Just coming into view around the planetary horizon, behind and beneath them, was a small space station.
"It's a low-orbit zero-G crystal manufacturing plant,"
Rogue 4 continued grimly.
"Mon Cal design. If I recall correctly, the normal worker complement is 15 to 22.
Wedge bit back a curse, keying for private frequency.
"Intercept course,"
he ordered.
"I want us between the station and the Larissi."
He switched the comm back as he threw power to the drive.
"I understand your anger and frustration with the Bothan government,"
he told the alien commander.
"But you must understand that we can't simply stand by and permit you to kill innocent people. General Garm Bell Iblis will be here soon. Perhaps he can mediate and..."
"There can be no mediation,"
the Larissi said with a note of finality in his voice.
"The law is the law, and its demands must be fulfilled. Neither you nor any others will stop us.
There was a click, and the conversation was over. Maybe not, Wedge muttered under his breath as he keyed back to the rogue's frequency. But we can sure give it a good try.
All right, rogues, time to get serious. Lock S-foils into attack position.
He reached for the control.
No!
Rogue Nine snapped suddenly.
Don't lock S-foils!
Wedge paused, his hand hovering over the switch.
Why not?
I don't know,
Rogue Nine said, his voice tight with strain.
There's something wrong. I can't quite... But there's definitely something wrong.
Rogue Leader?
Rogue Eight asked.
Stand by,
Wedge said, switching his comm to Rogue Nine's personal frequency.
Corrin, what's up?
Like I said, I don't know,
Rogue Nine repeated.
All I know is that I sensed danger when you ordered the S-foil lock. I'm running a diagnostic now, but so far I haven't found anything.
Is this one of your...
Wedge hesitated, not wanting to ask about the other's Jedi skills, even on a secure channel.
I think so, yes.
Rogue Nine answered the question anyway. Wedge glanced over at the Larison task force. They hadn't moved from their position, waiting patiently for their target to orbit over to them. And clearly not expecting any trouble at all from Rogue Squadron. He keyed back to the main Rogue frequency.
Everyone hold course,
he ordered, turning his X-Wing toward Rogue Nine.
You especially, Rogue Nine. I'm coming in close.
A minute later, they were flying in tight parade flight formation, the twin lasers on Wedge's starboard wingtips nearly brushing the underside of Rogue Nine's fuselage.
All right,
he said, easing in another couple of centimeters.
You've got my starboard flank, I've got your port side. Give it a fast look and see if you can spot anything that shouldn't be there. If you don't, we'll switch sides.
No need,
Rogue Nine said, his voice taut.
There it is. A thin cylinder running vertically between the S-foils, just forward of the laser power line.
You've got one too,
Wedge growled. Now that he knew where to look, the add-on was obvious.
10-1, the whole squadron's been booby-trapped.
All right, so we don't lock S-foils,
Rogue Two said.
We can still fire, can't we?
I don't think we should try it,
Wedge warned, frowning hard at the innocent-looking cylinder.
In fact, Corrin, roll starboard a couple of degrees, will you?
Rogue Nine's fuselage rolled away slowly from him.
I was right,
Wedge bit out, thoroughly disgusted now.
The top of the cylinder's got two branches. One runs into the wing's servo line. The other looks like it feeds right into the laser power line. My guess is that either locking or firing will knock out the lasers, or worse.
Rogue 12 cursed feelingly.
Has to have been one of those two Larisai and the Ditani maintenance crew who were always hanging around. So what do? Try to bluff them?
Wedge looked out at the Larison ships. They were on the move now, starting to form up around the manufacturing station, speeding helplessly toward them.
No point, he said quietly. They already know we're out of it.
And so they watched helplessly, as the Larisai set about quickly, efficiently, and systematically demolishing the station, taking their toll of 20 innocent lives in payment for the guilty. By the time the rest of the Peregrine task force arrived, it was all over. Or perhaps more accurately, it had just begun.
It's finally started,
Leia announced bleakly as she locked the apartment door behind her and sank down onto the couch next to Han.
The shooting is finally started.
Yeah, I heard,
Han said grimly, radiating concern as he slipped his arm around her.
What's the Senate doing about it?
Mostly trying to figure out what they can do,
Leia told him.
What's to figure?
Han asked.
The Larisai slaughtered 21 Bothans. Not to mention shredding a perfectly good space station. Can't Gaverson just order the Larison government brought up on charges?
I wish it were that easy,
Leia said.
Unfortunately, it's not. Three of the High Counselors have already stated they'll vote against any such resolution, on the grounds that we haven't made similar reparation demands on the Bothan government over the destruction of Ka'amas.
But they're not the same thing,
Han insisted.
In fact, they're exactly opposite. The Larisai killed innocent people. The Ka'amas thing is about not punishing innocent people.
We didn't demand that the Bothans punish the surviving guards who fired on the rioters either,
Leia reminded him. She sensed his flash of gruff embarrassment.
Yeah, he growled. Because of me.
Leia squeezed his knee reassuringly.
Not just because of you, dear, she said. The Council's position is that the guards' action qualified as self-defense. Unfortunately, not everyone sees it that way.
Han sniffed.
Clan thinking.
Yes, I know, Leia said. It doesn't make sense to me either, to hold a relative or clansman responsible for someone else's actions. But the reality is that family or clan accountability is a central tenet of a lot of cultures out there.
Maybe,
Han conceded.
But you still have to slap down the Larisai. If you don't, it'll just encourage everyone else who has a grudge against the Bothans.
It already has, Leia said, a shiver running through her. A dozen other governments have filed notice with the Senate that they're going to be presenting their own list of demands against the Bothans.
Or else?
Leia shrugged.
That's the implied threat.
Ah! You know what high esteem I hold the Bothans in, hun, but this is getting ridiculous. I suppose Phalia's screaming to Gaverson for protection.
He doesn't have to, Leia told him. The Diamala and Mon Calamari have announced they're sending ships to defend Bothawi against any further aggression.
Han whistled under his breath.
You're kidding. What kind of ships?
Big ones, Leia said. Star cruisers from the Mon Cals, some Nebula and Endurance-class warships from the Diamala. They say they're protecting the rights of the innocent. Others are saying they're just the latest victims of Bothan manipulation.
That would be my vote,
Han said.
Has Bel Iblis proved yet the Bothans were behind that phony Daitani mediation request?
No actual proof, but he personally has no doubts the whole thing was a ruse to keep him and the task force within easy striking distance of Bothawi,
Leia said, grimacing.
Between that and the Larisai sabotage of Rogue Squadron's lasers...
What? They've admitted it?
Not only admitted it, they were proud of it, Leia said. They consider it the height of honor to keep outsiders from getting hurt in one of their quarrels.
Han snorted.
I'll bet Wedge was real pleased about that.
He and Garm are about ready to spit blaster bolts, Leia said. Garm told Gaverson flat out that the New Republic is not going to play the lowest piece in anyone else's political games.
That sounds like a direct quote,
Han said.
Here, turn around a little.
Pulling his arm from behind her neck, he started massaging her shoulders.
It was,
Leia said, feeling her taut muscles softening reluctantly under the pressure of Han's fingertips.
That feels good.
Good. It's supposed to,
Han said, with a touch of forced humor.
You know, messing with someone like Bel Iblis wasn't a smart thing for the Bothans to do.
I'm sure they know that,
Leia agreed.
It shows how desperate they're getting.
She sensed the sideways movement as Han shook his head.
Ugh, this is crazy, Leia. Don't any of them even care that Thrawn's back?
Of course not, Leia said. Half of them don't believe a word of it. They think the Diamala cooked the whole thing up to scare everyone into letting the Bothans off the hook. The other half concede it may be true, but don't see any way the Empire could possibly be a threat to them anymore.
Then they're all fools,
Han growled.
Thrawn's got something up his sleeve. I'll bet the Falcon he does.
I agree, Leia said with a sigh. On the other hand, at this point, he almost doesn't have to do anything at all. The New Republic's rapidly degenerating into 100 different armed camps, all polarized around the Ka'amas issue.
Can't the Ka'amasi do anything to stop it?
Han asked.
They can't want this.
Of course they don't, Leia said. But you have to understand that Ka'amas has become more an excuse than it is a genuine issue. Everyone says they have the